Goeiemôre en baie welkom by Gesondheid op RSG. Ek gesels vanoggend met professor Johnny Pieter. Hy is hoof van kliniese immunologie en allergie by die Universiteit van Kaapstad se Mediese Skool en hy is ook verbonde aan die Long Instituut van die Mediese Skool van die Universiteit van Kaapstad. Ons gaan vandag gesels oor hoe jou immuunstelsel werk en spesifiek dan hoe jou immuunstelsel werk in terme van die COVID-virus. Dan sal julle agterkom dat dit nie net op een vlak is wat hierdie soldate geaktiveer word nie, maar op vele vlakke. Dit gaan ons dalk help om beter te verstaan hoe mens 'n immuniteit opbou teen 'n siekte en hoe lank dit hou en wat 'n vaksin kan doen om te help met daai immuunrespons. Professor Pieter, kan jy net in algemene terme vertel van hoe werk 'n mens se immuunrespons as 'n vreemde virus of bakterie of wat ook al by jou liggaam inkom?
Good morning to listeners and thanks very much for the invitation. So the first thing to understand as simply as possible, because the immune system is complicated. But the way I think of it is that the immune system is composed of, firstly, the barrier function. So your skin is a barrier, your airways are a barrier, and these are actually very important. They both have, actually, they release small molecules which fight a whole range of bugs. And actually, they also signal early on in the immune response that there's a problem, and they call in other parts of the immune response. Then the next thing to remember is that the immune system is composed of several different types of cells. And each of these cells have different specialized functions. Sometimes they recognize different parts of bacteria or viruses that need to kind of sound alarm. And we tend to divide those cells up into two aspects. They're cells that are part of the innate immune system. These are cells that people may have heard about, like neutrophils or macrophages. And these cells are kind of always ready. They're always ready to fight. And again, they tend to recognize what we call phylogenetically conserved aspects of bugs or viruses. So these are things that are common. Like, for instance, viruses always contain some amount of genetic material. And those kinds of subparts of those genetic materials are recognized by some receptors on these cells and makes them always able to respond, even if it's not specific to a particular kind of virus, let's say. And then the next part of your immune system is what we call your adaptive immune system. Your adaptive immune system, you've got to think about as like very targeted, focused fighters. Now, they need to be activated, and they will only recognize very small bits of specific organisms, namely specifically SARS-CoV-2 or specifically CMV, which is another kind of virus. And they, we tend to divide those two up into T cells or T lymphocytes or B lymphocytes. And they are, when we're going to talk about vaccines, they are some of the key cells that we try to induce with a vaccine. And the reason for that is they are responsible for what we call immunological memory. And what that is that once you've finished fighting an infection, some of those cells, some T cells and some B cells, will be preserved as what we call memory cells. So you can have T memory cells and you can have B memory cells. And those memory cells will always be around your body forever. Should you meet that same pathogen again, they will wake up and they will help to rapidly produce an immune response to fight off. And what we try to do with a vaccine essentially is to arm those guys and get them ready so that when you really meet the infection for the first time, those cells wake up very fast. So I think those are the kind of basic things. And then the other thing that people may have heard about in the context, particularly of COVID, where we've talked a lot in the media about a cytokine storm or some sort of hyperinflammation. The other thing is cytokines and chemokines, these are the small molecules that the immune cells use to communicate with one another. So they, for instance, will be released by those barriers, your respiratory barrier. They will sound the alarm, and what they will do is they will help immune cells to come into the tissue in your nose where there's now a new organism that needs to be fought or a new bug that needs to be fought. And so they are actually very important molecules. The problem is they can, when they are in excess, have other effects. So for instance, some of those early molecules, a very simple thing is they make you feel sick. like responsible for making people feel very tired or giving people a fever or making them have muscle aches when you get a virus. That's actually the signaling from those small molecules of the immune system. So like lots of things in the body, is that the immune system is something that it does its best to fight, and it's got these different layers. But actually, sometimes if it can't adequately deal with something, it will then start to cause its own tissue damage. Because like I mentioned, to give you an example, the innate immune cell, which is a neutrophil, inside of that cell is packaged a whole lot of enzymes and systems which make what we call oxygen-free radicals. And those are actually dangerous to tissues. So we've got to make sure that we keep those packaged until we need them to get rid of some bugs. And only then do we do that. Now, you can imagine in the context of, again, what we've been hearing about with hyperinflammation, if those things are suddenly inappropriately released in too much in your lung tissue, then you can start to have a serious problem and get very ill. So the immune system, I think, from a basic level, is best to think about at these different levels. And healthy immune response to a particular pathogen often involves multiple levels. And it's almost like when one level fails or is not adequate, you have to engage the next level and the next level up. And the consequence, if you have to engage all of those levels and none of them can deal with them, sometimes the consequence is too much inflammation, which then inadvertently can damage your healthy tissue.
So dit is nogal 'n baie ingewikkelde stelsel. Maar waar kom die antiliggame en antigene in? Want ons praat die hele tyd van teenliggame, as ons praat van COVID, hulle toets ook die teenliggame om te sien of jy COVID gehad het. Maar nou lyk dit of daardie teenliggame eintlik net een vlak van die respons is.
That's exactly right, actually. So the place where we're really talking about when we're talking now about a specific infection organism. So in this case, we're talking specifically about the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which is a single cell RNA virus. When we start talking about antigens and antibodies, we're now focusing in on that adaptive cellular immune system. So there, the key cells there are T cells and B cells. And what happens is your body has this ability. So the reason that we recognize and that you are you and I am myself is that, and I can't give you an organ without your immune system recognizing and rejecting, is that this is because of your, what we call your adaptive or your cellular immune system. And it recognizes chopped up little bits of your own cells or chopped up little bits of a virus like SARS-CoV-2. It will recognize that and present it. Your body's cells are presenting it to these T cells and B cells. And as a result, so when you meet SARS-CoV-2, those antigens are really just chopped up bits of the virus. And your T cells will recognize that and will both respond to it, and they will make a memory response. Similarly, your B cells will do that, and then your B cells will go through a sort of maturation process to become good antibody-making cells, and then they will make different types of antibodies against those specific aspects of the virus. But let's say you have a SARS-CoV infection. We can look with a PCR for the actual virus, so we're looking for the genetic code of the virus, or what we can do is say, has your immune system seen this virus before? And we take actually then bits of the virus and we see, do your body make an antibody that recognizes fragments of the virus? Similarly, we can also do that by checking whether your T cells recognize those bits of the virus. And there's some labs that are doing that, right? And you might have heard people are referring to spike protein or nuclear capsid protein or different envelope proteins. So the virus itself has got these different proteins. And what you basically do is you can look for antibodies directed against different aspects, and you can look for T cell responses against different aspects of the virus. So that's how that works.
As ons kyk na SARS-CoV-2, hoe lank hou die verskillende response? Met ander woorde, hoe lank sal jy in 'n mate beskerm wees dat jou liggaam 'n volgende intog van die virusse sal herken en teen dit veg?
So that's a very topical question at the moment. And what's important to recognize is that it's not the same for different infections or different viruses. So there, for instance, you can have chickenpox as a child, which is another virus. And yet most people that have chickenpox one time will make lifelong immunity. And you can measure their antibodies and you can see that they've got antibodies 20 years later. What it appears is that with SARS-CoV-2 virus, that this is not entirely the case with respect to antibodies. However, probably with respect to T cells, it is the case that there is long-lived memory responses. What's been interesting is that, of course, this has been evolving and we're only, 18 months or just over into the pandemic. So some of our response, like checking for responses, are only as long as that. But we have derived some data from the first SARS-CoV and also the MERS coronavirus. And really what seems to happen in terms of antibody responses is people start to drop their antibody responses at about 6 months from an infection, right? And that means that we're starting to see more reinfection. But what we suspect and what is confirmed by data is that mostly T cell responses to those same things are much longer standing. So people have been, in fact, with SARS-CoV-1, people have several years after infection still got T cell responses. This is probably similar, and I think it's probably worth explaining one aspect that's going on, which is my view, and I think it is borne out by the evidence, which is that we have to distinguish between neutralizing antibody responses, right, which might be what protects you from getting any kind of infection, right? So when those antibodies are very high, they probably go and sit on your respiratory surfaces. And when the virus arrives in your respiratory tract, they actually block it and it doesn't bind. That's what we call a neutralizing antibody. However, those levels probably wane, which is why people become vulnerable to infection. However, once you actually have infection, so once the virus has now got into your respiratory tract cells and is replicating, then you start to evoke your other immune responses. Those include innate immune responses, like we talked about earlier, but particularly you probably evoke your long-lived T-cell memory responses. And it's those responses that help to also talk to your other antibody responses. So early on in infection, in your second infection, for instance, you will make antibodies a whole lot faster than you did the first time. So in the first time, it might have taken you 1, maybe 2, maybe 3 weeks even to make good antibodies. When you get reinfected, you probably make antibodies in a few days because your T cells are waking up. And also your T cells are helping you to control the virus, which means you don't get severely ill. If you now take that away from infection and you look at vaccines, one of the things that is striking is that there's a lot of differences we're seeing in how much antibody a particular vaccine might induce, or one dose or two doses or three doses. But what seems to be quite consistent is the fact that the vaccines are generating good T cell responses. And to me, that's partly why we're seeing quite consistent data in terms of the performance in vaccines in keeping people from severe disease or hospitalization or death. So you might not necessarily get no infection, but in the end, your immune system is still working and your adaptive immune system, which is your memory part, is still working. And that's helping to stop you from getting very ill, and it's waking up quickly.
Wat gee die beste immuunrespons, die siekte self of die vaksin?
It's a very good question, and it's a very interesting question. So the first thing is that natural infection, what's fascinating is that if you were looking, we were talking about antibody levels. One of the things that we also note is that antibody levels have seemed to correlate with disease severity. So in other words, if you had a asymptomatic infection, you might have no antibodies or very low antibodies. And if you were very sick and landed in hospital, your antibody levels were very high. That probably reflects the fact that like we discussed in the beginning, that your immune system is complex. So different people actually are dealing with the virus successfully at different levels, right? I think that the answer to that question is natural immunity to the virus appears to be more comprehensive than vaccine-induced immunity potentially, okay? Although that's also not really confirmed by too much robust data. But the vaccines also, they often come as a package with only one or two of the viral proteins, right? So whereas your immune system, when you get exposed to the whole natural infection, you might make a bigger, stronger antibody response to a nuclear capsid antigen rather than a spike protein, if that makes sense. Whereas with a vaccine, your immune system's directed to a limited repertoire of proteins. I think on some levels, they're probably equivalent, like we're seeing with severe disease. You know, like if you have had COVID before and it's been mild to moderate, you're very unlikely to have severe COVID in the future. And the same is being induced by a vaccine response. What we're now doing, which is, I think, is very fascinating, is, of course, we're now starting to get people with, you know, two or three doses of vaccines. People are studying whether you can use combinations of vaccines. And of course, the other question is people are getting vaccines after they've had COVID before, something which we call hybrid immunity. And from an immunological perspective, hybrid immunity appears to actually be more robust than vaccine immunity, based purely on the levels of neutralizing antibody titer that we induce. And I'd say that with a sort of disclaimer, because remember that one of the issues with this is that when we measure things in the lab, even when we measure, you know, be that neutralizing antibody or a T cell response, we're not measuring the whole comprehensive picture of the immune system. And there might be things that are, you know, happening with your innate immune system. There's something now we understand called training of the innate immune system or trained immunity. And that's where actually your innate immune system can be in a way primed and ready for like the next infection. So I say that with some degree of a disclaimer.
Tot watter mate sal die vaksin wat teen die eerste oorspronklike virus vervaardig is, nog effektief wees teen nuwe variante? Hoe baie moet 'n variant verskil van die oorspronklike virus sodat die vaksin nog steeds effektief is?
I think that's a million-dollar question in a way that we're all trying to, that we're all worried about and we're all following and looking at the data. Fortunately, the data so far is encouraging. So there are now several variants of concern around the world, and we have not seen, I mean, a country like Israel or the UK are good examples where they've got large vaccine coverage with different types of vaccines. And what you are not seeing there with new variants is escape in hospitalization and death rates, right? So you're starting to see more infections. Now, that could relate to either waning antibody titers, so when people were vaccinated later, all those things. What it's encouragingly saying to us is that it's likely that there's still an underlying comprehensive, probably cellular-based immune response that is cross-protective against different variants. Now, I think like a good example, probably if you want to also talk about other viruses, to look at influenza. So influenza, which is definitely a virus that has these antigenic shifts and antigenic drifts that occur in the thing. So they have a mutation and they're changing quite a bit. What we see there is we see that every year you become vulnerable to whatever the seasonal vaccine strain is. That's why we give people seasonal flu vaccines, is to get their antibodies high enough to protect them from that particular strain. But for most people, if they've seen a similar, let's say it's an influenza A, you know, H1N1, if they've seen in their lifetimes a similar virus to that, they tend to not get severely ill, right? Unless their immune systems are changing, which is why every year when people are older, the people that get most severely affected by influenza are, in fact, older people whose immune systems are getting weaker for several different reasons. But we're talking now about a healthy, competent immune system. If you've seen a similar virus even years back, you probably won't get severe disease, even though you'll get ill. Now, we hope that vaccines for SARS-CoV-2 will be similar, that, you know, once you've now had this vaccine, it's generated a repertoire that's sufficient to provide you protection from severe disease, but maybe not protection enough to prevent getting any infection at all. For the most part, viruses tend to become increasingly transmissible and less virulent. That's the general sort of trend. But we've never had a situation where we've had billions of people infected potentially at the same time. And what that is doing to the virus in terms of variants is unknown. So I guess it's still possible that some mutations may arise that cause immune evasion. But I think the data so far is encouraging for the key metrics, which are really the severe disease, hospitalization and death.
Volgens professor Glenda Gray van die Mediese Navorsingsraad, lyk dit wel of die Delta variant, hoewel hy meer aansteeklik is, hy nie so virulent is soos die Beta variant nie. Is dit wat julle ook sien?
I think there's a comprehensive data set now that's suggesting that the Delta is significantly more transmissible than the other variants. So I think the data we're seeing is consistent exactly with what Glenda's reporting.
As iemand gevaksineer word, jy kry die entstof, en dan sê hulle juist eers na 14 dae of miskien na 21 dae wat jy meer bestand is of wat jou immuunstelsel die virus sal herken. Maar sommige navorsers sê, in die eerste 2 weke het jy nie net 'n gewone risiko om siek te word nie, om COVID te kry nie, jy het eintlik 'n verhoogde risiko om COVID te kry. Is dit wat julle sien of kan dit waar wees? Hoe werk dit?
So I think that the first thing to say is that there's no data to support that. We definitely have seen COVID infections, you know, occur within the first 14 days or the first 28 days of post-vaccination when people are not considered yet immunologically protected. And it comes back to, from an immune perspective, it comes back to exactly what I was explaining earlier about the basics of an immune response, that the first time you ever see some form of a virus or an components of a virus in a vaccine, it takes the immune system some time to recognize that. And that probably takes 1 to 2 weeks. And as you go further, your immune response even gets better, it matures. And of course, obviously the second dose similarly helps to boost that, right? So I think that from an immunological perspective, there is no data or no sort of biological plausibility that that's the case. I think probably far more likely is that those things are behavioral about where the vaccines have been rolling out. They've often been rolling out, or people are more inclined to potentially have a vaccine during a surge in the cases. We've certainly saw that. We saw that in the Sisonke trial. We've seen that in other places. We see that reported to the vaccine safety group, where people are actually infected with COVID when they go for a vaccine. So they already have COVID, and then it just manifests. You know, there's an incubation period too. So you can often go for a vaccine and not know you're actually already infected. And you might only find out 3 or 4 days after, you know, having the vaccine. And certainly, we wouldn't expect you to have any increased risk from an immune-based perspective.
Die simptome wat party mense kry na vaksinering. In hierdie geval word dit tog nie die virus wat ingespuit word nie. So dit moet eintlik die liggaam se eie reaksie op die entstof wees. Is dit korrek?
Yes, that's spot on. So I think that what people must understand is that the immune system uses these different layers of signaling, particularly these like a little alarm molecules. So when I was explaining like how a virus would get in and, you know, go into your respiratory tract, your cells would release these little molecules, be they cytokines, antibacterial molecules or antiviral molecules. Those actually cause you often to feel sick. That's what's responsible for fevers, for muscle aches, for those symptoms. In a way, with a vaccine, we are trying to do that. We are trying because those molecules help your immune system to actually make a good, strong response. So a lot of the early side effects, we see this sort of in the first 5 days after vaccine, a lot of those side effects relate to the immune response that we're actually trying to generate to make sure that the immune response will last as long as we can to the virus that we're interested in. So what's been interesting is that the vaccines use different strategies to do this, right? So the two ones that we've got in South Africa at the moment are the mRNA vaccine strategies and the adenovirus vector strategies. And the adenovirus vector strategies, in a way, they introduce your body is getting infected with another virus, an adenovirus, right? What's happened is we've used genetic engineering to add the COVID proteins into that virus, right? But the key about it is it's called a non-replicating virus. What means is it just gets into your cells and then it can't do what a normal virus does, which is to replicate and break your cells and get released. It doesn't do that. It stops. So it just gets taken up enough to get presented to the immune system and to wake up all of these systems. And then it delivers the message of the SARS-CoV-2 to the immune system to hopefully make a memory. And those molecules that are making you have muscle aches, making you feel sick, are in fact helping the other parts of your immune system to make a good response. The mRNA vaccines are doing that in a slightly different way. They've got some of a nanoparticle lipid carrier, and the actual RNA itself is also triggering the innate immune system as well as triggering the adaptive cellular immune response. So we actually consider that what we call reactogenicity to vaccines to be good and a normal immune response. And quite a lot of people have reported to me that they found that worse when they've had COVID. So a lot of people are saying that when I had a vaccine after I had COVID, now I feel like I got COVID again in the first few days. My symptoms have come back. Now that actually reflects the fact that you made an immune response to your COVID when you had it. And now your body's being reminded that, hey, this is like similar. And it's then making a good, strong response. And that's why you're kind of feeling sick again for a few days. But the advantage of it is you always have to think about the long term, which is that that means often that you're going to have a better, longer memory response to protect you in the months ahead.
So vinnig kom ons aan die einde van vandag se program. Maar skakel volgende week weer in. Dan sit ek die gesprek voort met professor Johnny Pieter, immunoloog van die Grote Skuur Hospitaal en die Universiteit van Kaapstad en ook verbonde aan die Long Instituut van die Universiteit van Kaapstad. Hy gesels dan verder oor die verband tussen jou immuunstelsel, COVID en die COVID-vaksine. Gaan kyk gerus op RSG se webblad rsg.co.za. Ek het daar interessante agtergrondinligting gelaai oor die verskillende komponente van 'n mens se immuunstelsel. Tot volgende week dan, groete van my, Marie Hudson.